Hey everyone, welcome again to our C3 Church Global Podcast. I'm Phil Pringle, your host. It's such a joy today to be talking with John Finkelde from Grow a Healthy Church. Great to have you with us, John.
Phil, great to be with you on the podcast. Always enjoy hanging out, my friend.
You are such an inspiration. You're such a techno king. I'm almost a geek, but you're not a geek. But my Lord, I get so inspired by all of the fact that here you are, 84 years old, and you're still like, I don't know how old you are. You're just
looking good for 90, aren't I? I'm just about a year behind you, Phil. So yeah, still a young spring old chicken, man. Just getting started.
Yes, exactly. Well, and you were pastoring for how long there in Western Australia?
Pastored 30 years in our church. I was 10 years on the team as a youth pastor, associate pastor, small groups pastor, doing everything the senior pastor didn't want to do, pastor, and then led our church for 20 years. And then the last 9 years, since we handed over our church, 9 years ago, I handed my church over. That's crazy. Been running consulting and coaching and training and resourcing pastors around the world with Grow a Healthy Church. So,
what do you prefer?
That's a great question. I really like what I'm doing now. And when I was pastoring, I really loved pastoring. But in the last probably, I reckon the last year or two, I thought I'm really looking forward to the next stage of life, which is going to be more consulting, coaching, training. It's a sweet spot of mine. But I actually love pastoring. Pastoring was great, even though you have some valley moments. I mean, the joys far outweigh the sorrows with pastoring. So I loved it. And I love what I'm doing now too, to be honest.
Well, it's certainly needed, John, and you will be one of the best in the world for people to get hold of. So people, it's Grow a Healthy Church, John Finkelde, church consultant extraordinaire. And he's such an amazing guy. He's in the category of people like Tony Morgan of the Unstuck Church Group, Sam Chand of, I don't know what group he is, but the Sam Chand group. And then here in Australia, I guess we'd have Mike Murphy, doing a similar job up in Europe. I know a couple of guys up there. And here in Australia, we have John Finkelde and obviously helping out a lot of pastors. I tell you, it is important to have somebody in your life who helps you discover what God has got inside of you. And I know that for me, in my church coaching, consulting, the best thing I can do for people is help them on a path of discovery of who they are, what their gift is, what they're meant to be doing, and then apply themselves to that. What have you found, John, to be the most consistently similar themes that you are addressing in leaders and churches in today's world?
Yeah, my good friend Wayne Pete, a good friend of both of ours over in New Zealand, he talks about the three C's: call, context, and capacity. And I love that, working with pastors, going, all right, what's your call? What's your specific call? What's God asked you to do? What's Jesus calling you to do? What's your context? Where do you live? Who have you got around you, both relationally, resource-wise in your church? Are you in a regional church? Are you in a city church? Are you in a city, suburban? Where are you? What's your context about? Figure that out. And what's your capacity? What's the capacity that you have to pastor and to lead and to minister? What's the capacity of your team? And you can't do an awful lot about your call. Jesus decides your call. Your context is your context. If you live in Sydney, you live in Sydney. You don't live in Kalgoorlie. You don't live in Auckland. What's your context? Know your context. Exegete your context. Work it out. Audit it. Do a whole audit of where you live. But then what you really can move is your capacity. You can shift your capacity. You might be able to shift your call or your context, but you can shift your capacity. You can grow as a minister. You can grow as a leader. You can become bigger on the inside. You can certainly pull a bundle of levers in your church to move from being unhealthy to healthy, to being stuck, to begin to grow. And I think I really focus in on that capacity area, Phil, when I'm working with pastors.
I've always understood capacity to be a modern day word for the word, the Bible word, patience. And I've found that when I am going through a trial that doesn't seem to end, it just goes on and on and on, and I am having to maintain a good attitude while I am waiting, that develops a thing called patience. Now, in my view, and trials definitely do. I mean, you get through some things, you think, if I can get through that, I can get through anything. But I've learned to not actually say that, because God is listening. And if he hears you say you can get through it, he's got a thing up there called anything.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, my Lord, let's give that a shot then. Because he actually is more interested in developing our eternal character than in giving us temporal comfort. And when we go through these trials today, it's preparing us for what's coming up tomorrow. And it can often seem like the pressure of the trial that we're getting today far exceeds our current level of responsibility, which is because it's like a simulator for the future of what we are going to have to be capable and have the capacity for. So there's no point in having an 18-wheel truck, Mack truck destiny and vision if you've only got a Volkswagen motor.
Yep,
and you're going to blow up.
And so
trying to pull that much of a thing without that capacity, it's got to be developed. And I don't know shortcuts to the development of capacity. If you've got a pill I can take, send me free. And if there's a course you can rush off to with Tony Anthony Robbins or something, or get your capacity up, I just find that you get built into who you are through some very rugged times. And if you have a good attitude through it, you come out with a bigger capacity to actually cope with it. Capacity is your capacity to cope with the number of problems and visions that walk through your door at work. And so if 10 problems walk through your door, you're coping. You're okay. We can cope with this. You go home, there's more. I'll cope with that. That's capacity. And to carry this without blowing up or blowing out or exploding, imploding, I think all of us, if we can increase our capacity, God can increase our vision, just like you're saying.
And I think it's true. And one of the primary focal points when a pastor invites me in to do a consulting zone with their church or in coaching with them, one of the first places I visit with them is themselves. Where are you at? What's your level of growth? What's your level of development? How are you caring for yourself and your family? Let's talk about your personal world, because as it goes with you, it'll go with your church. And so if you're a pastor who's kind of like, you know, just rushing after this latest shiny bright thing, rushing after that shiny bright thing, then I think you find that, hey, you know what, you're not really staying focused on the crucial levers in your church that'll produce health and will position you for growth. So it's quite amazing, Phil, over the 9 years of consulting, I have been horrified and shocked a number of times with how pastors actually are living their life in a way that is never going to be sustainable for growth and health over the decades. And I think I've heard it's Bill Gates's quote, but I don't know who quoted it. It said that, you know, we underestimate what we can produce in a decade. We overestimate what we can produce in a year. And I think it's that long-term view of, hey, over the 10, 20 years, 30 years of pastoring, I'm going to produce fruit. But if you're living in an unsustainable way, then you're not going to be there for the 10, 20 years. So I think you're right. I think that ability to kind of plod with God through all sorts of things, walk with the Lord and stay focused. I mean, the beauty of a coach and a consultant in my eyes is the fresh eyes they bring to a normal situation. Everyone else sees the normality, When I walk into a church, I see everything and go, and I don't actually say anything. I just ask a question. What's that there for? Tell me what your reason is for doing that and try to understand their context and then go, maybe that over there should be over here. Maybe the energy you're putting into that thing could actually do better if it was put into here. So
That's clever consulting, asking the questions and then making suggestions. It is. Why do churches and the sustainability thing, I'd love to talk more about that, but I just want to get back on and maybe the idea of churches declining. I mean, there's three things. Churches can be growing, holding, or losing, declining. There are a few churches around right now after COVID that are finding people aren't coming back to church.
That's right.
What are you telling guys in regards to that? I'm finding that people are loving coming back. And we're asking people, ask your friends, just let them know. It's so, and once they're back in fellowship, I'm so missed this. The isolation, the Zoom church services. Yeah. I mean, that it's great to have it there, but I do not think it's any replacement for being in person at church. I certainly do not want to go to heaven online. I want to be there.
That would be hell. I think when I come into a church and they're in a season of decline, I kind of look at a number of things. One is I'm going to ask, okay, what is the Lord up to here? Is this actually a pruning? Because Jesus said, if you're fruitful, you'll get pruned. Or you'll get cut back in order to be more fruitful. Now, when a pastor says, hey, I think we're having a pruning season, I said, good, we'll know in a year whether that's true or not. Because if in a year you're not more fruitful, then it ain't pruning, buddy. It's declining. So let's work that out. So it's hard to know if a church is in pruning, but you'll know in 12 months without a shadow of a doubt. If it's declining, it's not the Lord pruning, buddy. There's things wrong. I find that one of the reasons, I think it's a primary reason that churches decline, is they drift from their key focal points. So they don't focus on their front door, which is visitors, and they don't focus on the back door, which is serving in small groups. So they actually get away from the primary things that will position a church for health and growth. And I've heard you say it, Phil, you know, if visitors, it's the only way your church grows. If you don't have visitors, you do not grow. And that, I love that other saying of yours, you know, the 15 minutes after the service is the primary place of church growth. It's a primary moment. So I go into many churches, too many churches, where they're not focused on people visiting and then getting those people back for a second visit.
Right.
And then also they don't have a strong focus of pathways into serving, pathways into small groups. And another key pathway, again, I find neglected, it's pathway to water baptism.
Huh.
Are your people baptized in water? Have you actually audited your church? Because those things are backdoor things that you can shut really, I wouldn't say easily. I think it's simple, but it's hard work. Get your people serving, get them into small groups, get them baptized in water, because that's a massive, significant discipleship moment. Yeah. You drift from those front door and those back door things, and a church will, any church, even a thriving church, if they drift from those front door and back door things, they will decline over a period of time. I think also that for some churches, this is interesting, some churches actually listening may see this, that if you have a demographic change in the area where you live, where suddenly it was an older area and suddenly it's a young area and you haven't shifted be relevant to that area, or maybe the ethnic makeup. This has happened massively in Australia. The ethnic makeup of suburbs has changed dramatically in the last 15 years in Australia. And if you don't match, if your church looks markedly different from the 20-minute drive around your church, you're going to decline. You have to match what is there within a 20 to 30-minute drive. And that may mean some significant changes to how you do church. It may mean significant changes even in your leadership of your church and how you reach those people. And I've been in churches in Australia in the last 10 years consulting that they'll tell me, you know, 20 years ago, you would not have found a person of different ethnicity to white middle-class Australian. Now that church is Asian, African, primarily in its ethnicity. So that also, I think, can be a reason. Probably the other thing I think I'd see as well, Phil, is whenever a pastor gets distracted from their main thing, what is your call? What is your context? Why are you there pastoring that church? And we all get weary at times, and we all get a bit tired, and we all get a bit bored at times, even with week in, week out doing church. If a pastor gets distracted from the main thing, I'm here to answer the call of the Lord, to build this church, to grow a healthy church. I think that's also when decline can come in, and you can get pastors who are focused on other things instead of their primary thing. Hey, the Lord's planted me here to make sure that this church is healthy and positioned for everything the Lord wants to achieve through it. So yeah. I think there's a few things. And I find if guys say to me, look, my church is really in trouble, I always say, well, get someone in. It doesn't have to be me, but get someone in. Get a mate to come in and have a look at what you're doing, because you've probably got your eyes off the ball and you don't realize you've got your eyes off the ball.
I think it definitely should be John Finkelde that you get in. Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think, I think sometimes people's emotions are reading the will of God before their head does. And I've watched pastors get cranky, they start losing interest, like you say, they get distracted. Maybe it's time to move on. Maybe it's time for another deal. I think they should explore that concept as well. And definitely keeping pace with changes of all kinds. And the way that you actually make those changes, I've found, is by profiling. The people that celebrating, honoring, and profile. What you celebrate, honor, and profile, you'll get more of. So if suddenly you've got, you used to have single people all around you because they're young renters, but now it's been gentrified and families are moving in and whatever else is happening, then you put families up on the stage for their testimony of how they bought a house. Couples, et cetera, rather than the way you used to do it. And you profile middle-aged people. You just celebrate, profile, and honor what you want more of. And especially when it comes to quality, I guess, spiritual quality, character quality. If you are wanting that sort of person, then they should be in the pulpit. They should be singing. They should be in the band. They should be serving on the doors. And so... And you should be giving those people attention as a leader. I think when you invest in a particular area of your church, then that's the area that's going to grow, no doubt about it.
Totally. And I think you do have to stay current with what's going on, both in society and in church life, and current within your context. Because I think if you're pastoring in Europe, not everything happening in North America is going to be relevant to you. If you're pastoring in Australia, what's going on in North America? North Americans publish like there is no tomorrow. They are great broadcasters and writers and printers, man. They get everything out across the globe. But I reckon in COVID especially, the localized scenario is where you need to really dig into, because what's happening in certain parts of the world are not going to be happening in your backyard. I mean, I live in the most isolated big city in the world. You would not know that COVID is around at all in our city. Social distancing, not happening. People going to church, singing, hugging, shaking hands. It's just like completely normal. I think we've had one community case in 11 months of COVID in our city. So when guys That's are hilarious. Writing in the States about, man, COVID lockdown, I'm sitting here going, nothing like that here, buddy. And if pastors listen to too much of that, I go, get local. Find out what's happening in your backyard. Work on that. Forget everybody else. Yeah. Sure, pick up a few ideas and whatever, but get local and focus in, you know, on what's going on around you. I think it'd be far better.
Exactly. If a guy is trying to figure out, is my church healthy?
Right.
What are the vital signs that you would you would latch on? I know the ones that I would, but I'll let you chat first in this conversation about what vital signs you as a church consultant, you take out your stethoscope, you put your finger on their pulse. What are you looking for?
That's a great question. I get asked a lot that question. So I look at the quantitative things and qualitative. So I call it hard data, soft data. So the hard data is all the metrics. There's about six or seven key metrics. I can dive into these if you like. I think it might be helpful for
a few guys.
Dive into them. Okay. So I'm looking at attendance ratios. So if your church has 100 people on your database, active database, how many of those people are turning up on average on a Sunday? It should be, depends where you, it should be between 50 and 70. Depends where you live. In larger cities, it's more 50. In regional towns, no traffic, less on, you can get up towards 70. Then once they turn up, what's the split of the generations? Tony Morgan says you should have 70% of your Sunday attendance adults, 10% youth, 20% kids. And so you got a 70, 10, 20 split. Now, if you're around those numbers, it's telling you that 30% of your Sunday attendance is next generation. So that's going to stand you in good stead for the next 5-10 years, because those kids are going to become young people. Those young people are going to get married and grow up and have families. There's going to be a flow through. So if I see a church with like 3% of their Sunday attendance is children, they're on the way to death. If they don't pull that kids ministry lever, they're dying.
Amazing.
Do those metrics. Small group percentages, how many of your adults are in small groups? I don't count youth because youth ministries tend to go up and down. So apples to apples. Churches should have at least 50% of their adults in small groups. If you can get it above 70, you're doing miraculous stuff. There's always 20 to 30% of your people who are resistant to building the relational dynamics that are needed. Serving percentages, how many of your adults again are serving? And again, in larger churches tends to be around 50%. Small and medium churches, you can get up to 70 to 80%. And so you've got to look at the size of your church when you're working that out. Secondary giving percentages. Pastor Phil, I was in a church in Australia, in a regional town, church about 300. Their secondary giving program, building program, was pretty well exactly the same amount as their annual tithe.
Huh.
So remarkable. They were 100%. I told the guy, you're the top of the premiership ladder, mate. I've never met another church, got 100%. But I think churches can get 30 to 40 to 50% of their Sunday giving. So if I go into a church and they're getting 5% in their missions building projects, I can say, you know what? You get a lot of money that will come into projects that will advance the kingdom, build the church. So let's see if we can get it up to 10, 15, 20, 30%.
Yeah.
So again, that's an indicator of, is there sacrificial giving beyond the regular Sunday giving? Sacrificial giving is a huge indicator, in my estimation, of a church that is healthy. Water baptisms. I love Tony Morgan. He comes up with a 7 to 9% of Sunday attendance, people getting baptized. You got 100 people averaging on Sunday.
Right.
Should have 7, 8 or 9 people a year getting baptized. Visitors. You should be getting the number of visitors that you have on your Sunday average. Whatever your Sunday average is over a year, you should get that number of visitors. So
they're bundled. How does that work? The number of people.
So you got 100 people on average on a Sunday.
Yeah.
If over a year you got 100 visitors.
Okay, got it.
If you can keep, say, 15 to 20 of them.
Right.
Then what you'll do is you're immediately replacing the people who will leave every year, because you'll have a 10 to 15% churn rate. You're not going to escape that. It'll happen. It's horrendous, but it'll happen.
Yeah.
One large mega church in America, their churn rate was 30% every year, 30%.
I heard one guy in Orange County, California, I won't say who, everybody would know him, but he said his estimation is that he has a person for 9 months.
Wow.
In his church. And that's one of the largest churches.
I think that is an
issue with very large churches. And I have no problem with churches being 200 to 300 people. Some people put them down and say, small churches. But I've found that they are the powerhouse in this COVID-19 time. And
totally
especially
right.
In the multi-site thing. People are a little weary of the huge crowd every weekend.
Yeah.
But also they can hide their lifestyles and live however they want and get away with it, getting lost in a big crowd. So coming into a smaller group is a lot more transparent and vulnerable. And I think that we should be celebrating and really honoring all the pastors of these groups. And even when they get to 300, to start another one of a 300 somewhere down the road.
Absolutely. Yeah. People are hungry for social connection, and
community
you get it quicker in a smaller medium church.
It's a deep cry in the heart of people today because so many things are isolating us. Even though we've got 7 billion people on the planet, it's probably the loneliest generation on record.
Yep, I reckon. Yeah. So I look at all those, that hard data key metrics, but you can't look at that alone. So then I get into the qualitative soft data. So I'm looking if the feel in the church is about outsiders. Is there a feel and a vibe there that, hey, we're focused on our community. We want to bless our community. We want to reach our community. So there's a feel on Sunday that visitors are the VIPs, not the members. The visitors are the VIPs. We love them, look after them. We're really focused on them. I want to hear if there's any laughter around. Are people joyful? Is there a kind of up sort of nice feel? Do people laugh during the service? Do people laugh after church? Is there a, or is there a kind of dull feeling of low-key sort of slightly oppressed sort of feel? And that's a qualitative thing that you're just feeling, just that you know.
Yeah, think funeral.
Yeah, funeral compared to a wedding. That's it. Totally. I love that. I love that. Yeah, funeral church, never going to grow. Never.
NCD, Christian Schwartz, he said that a church that loves, laughs.
I love it. That's
A loving church is a laughing church.
I agree. Mm. Because when I'm consulting, I do a lot of interviews with key leaders. I'm in a lot of leaders' meetings and just hanging around. And I love hanging around and talking to people. I'm an extrovert. And I'm looking for warmth. Is there warmth in the language, in the relationships? Right. When I'm one-on-one with a board member or a team member on the staff, I'm looking at what – I ask them a whole series for an hour, a whole series of questions. And what I'm looking for, is there cynicism here? Is there a kind of a little – is there a bit of toxicity? Is there something a little bit ouchy here?
Yeah.
Or is there a warmth? Is there a love?
Right.
And you can listen and hear people what they're saying. Probably the other qualitative thing is I look at a church's communications in writing, the video stuff, all they're doing. How clear is it? Is there a clarity about what they're saying? Is there a sense of focus? So there's kind of a range of things that very much, and this is where consultants and coaches do their best work, because they actually are feeling atmospheres to a great degree. And they're getting a feel for people. So when I go into a consulting scenario, I tend to go in with a very phlegmatic, sanguine approach. I don't go choleric. I'm fair degree choleric in me, but I'm going in happy, smiling, I'm relaxed, I'm chilled. Nothing is a problem. I'm low maintenance. And then it helps lower people's guard because they're all a bit nervous. The consultants come with the briefcase from out of town. Kind of chilled and walked in. And over a couple of days, you start to kind of people open up.
Yes.
And because you're the outsider, they open up quicker with you. And then you just get a feel for it, where they're at. And probably the greatest thrill of consulting, Pastor Phil, I think, is being able to understand the context, read the context, and then take the principles of church health, church growth, and apply them in a customized way to the context.
Right.
And that's what I find challenging, really challenging, but also thrilling when you get into the role. And then you see churches starting to make changes, begin to grow and get healthier. It's a buzz, man.
It's incredible.
I don't want to go back.
What one little change can bring, even if it's just – but sometimes they can be so hard. It can be just the removing of a certain person.
Yeah,
who's an epicenter for negativity.
Yep.
And anyway, we've come to the close of our little interview and conversation, John, and it's always a delight to be talking with you. Hey, everybody, thank you for joining in. It's been a pleasure to be sharing with you today. Thanks for having us in your ears. If you're at the gym or on your speakers in your car or wherever we are talking to you, make sure you hit that subscribe button so that we'll pop up in your inbox every Wednesday and be delivering to you information and conversations and things that we know will help you. Also, if you've got any comments or questions, please put them in the put them in our inbox, and we will definitely attempt to answer the questions and raise those topics in future conversations. We love you guys, and it's been such a pleasure talking with you today. We look forward to being with you next week. See you then. Bye.